What are the sources and origins of writings like the Book of Mormon, the Quran, and the Gospel of Thomas, and how do they compare to the Bible? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August is One Word, Many Writings, a study of the origins of religious writings. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can find out more about One Word, Many Writings by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. One Word, Many Writings by Dr. Adam Francisco. I remember when it dawned on me, this was probably close to 10 years ago. You know, you get behind a radio microphone and you say things and people disagree. It happens all the time. You can't really say anything without finding someone who will disagree with you. And it occurred to me how woefully inadequate my skills were in dealing with people who would email or call and disagree. I didn't know how to deal with it. And it's a lot of it was, as a former parish pastor, not often having people disagree with me, but some of it was just kind of a lost skill that I realized maybe hadn't even lost, never really even learned. The ability to debate, to argue, to disagree with one another without demonizing one another. And I don't think it's gotten any better in the subsequent 10 years. That's just my opinion. You might disagree. Joining us to talk about the art of conversation and debate, its loss, and perhaps the prospect of regaining it, Shane Rosenthal. He's executive producer of the national radio show The White Horse Inn. He's author of an article for the latest Modern Reformation magazine titled The Lost Art of Conversation. Shane, welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you, Todd.
You say that instead of actually engaging in conversation or debate ourselves, we depend in all the various places where we have conversation on what you call conversation surrogates. Who are they?
Well, you know, they are people like Glenn Beck or people on NBC, Fox News, Salem Radio Network. Whether it's radio or television, many of us have, you know, we participate into the important discussions about politics or religion or values via these surrogates who do the talking and thinking for us. And even programs like Issues, Etc. and White Horse Inn, I think it's one thing to listen in on other people having conversations. So basically, I mean, you and I work in radio, and we are trying to inspire people into thinking about crucial issues. My concern is that if we're only relying on the conversation surrogates, then people themselves won't be having those important conversations themselves. And I think a lot of times that's what happens. People, they treat those important conversations in various outlets as their release. And then when it comes to rationing through the important conversations with friends, coworkers, relatives on important issues like religion and politics, that we sometimes shy away because we know they often produce more heat than light. Certainly that's what you see in a lot of the talking heads on television.
So it's kind of that scenario where someone says, well, I heard it on Fox News, or I heard Rush Limbaugh, or I heard one of these guys say it. They repeat what they've heard said, but when challenged on it, they can't defend it because they haven't thought it through themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just basically parroting what you've heard without thinking it through. And unfortunately, that's, I fear, what's going on a lot today. We don't actually think through positions. We take the talking points of others.
But it's not like we're not talking. What has replaced conversation on important topics like politics and religion and all those things?
Okay, so in reality, what often happens is you may be with, I was with some cousins on 4th of July, invariably you'll hook up with people who have different political or religious worldview than yourself, and sometimes you know that if you go down that path, it's going to cause a discussion and a debate. And sometimes because of that, you shy away and you just push the discussion into the shallow end of the pool. And that is a very, very common thing that happens in our day. We have the substantive conversations via our media surrogates. And when it comes to actually talking with people, real human beings right in front of us, we steer away. The reason we steer away is because we know it's going to get volatile. It will emotions will get involved, and when that happens, we'll often throw bombs at the other person. So what I tried to do in the article was to focus on the key things that have been forgotten. And you know, there's been a long conversation about really great and important things about what it means to be human throughout the course of human civilization. So you start back in the Greeks, and they are talking a lot about what it means to really converse and how to do it winsomely. And then that conversation progresses throughout the Christian West. And so one of the things that I point out was the first things we want to focus on as Christians, the first thing we should focus on is caritas, that is love and kindness. So no matter how much you think you're in the right, no matter how much you think your opponent's views are wrong, how much you think he's just really hurting himself, the country, whatever, he's still a human being, and he deserves respect, because the sum of his ideas do not equal the value of a person created in the image of God. And so we should strive to love our neighbor. And as a result, we don't want to throw bombs, demonize him. We want to, out of love of neighbor, understand him and to get his ideas right. And we should pursue clarity and real, true understanding. That's the first goal in any conversation.
Well, that leads to the next one, and it's important how the two go together. With about a minute or so before we take our next break, Shane, that part of having that genuine charity in Christian conversation, need to make sure that we truly understand the other person's position, even if we think we understand it to begin with?
Right, because there has to be some kind of key ingredient here in, before there's any talk of unity, there has to be clarity and 100% understanding. There may be some of the implications, the hidden assumptions, something that you're not quite getting through. So you basically are asking the person to clarify their position, and then once that happens, there's still a lot of work to do. Just to how does that match with your worldview? Are there any? What are the unquestioned assumptions? What are the implications? The long term, not just the short term implications. You got to think through the position. Again, this notice the whole how different this is from just simply accepting the talking points from a speaker on television or radio. Again, not that listening to television or radio talking heads is a bad thing, but if that's all we're doing, we're setting ourselves up for failure.
So it may be even as simple as saying to a person on the other side of the debate, all right, tell me about your position, teach me about why it matters, give me the basics here, asking them to explain themselves. About 30 seconds, Shane.
Right, and that's where, in addition to caritas, which was the love of neighbor, which is the I am at least here acknowledging that you are important and that your ideas are worth listening to. And then you listen to them in a posture of humility. And so that's the next stage I go to in the article. So we have to acknowledge that we are willing to learn, if not to learn the truth from this person, to at least learn his position. And
let's take another break. When we come back, we'll spend the next 10 minutes with Shane Rosenthal, executive producer of the national radio show, The White Horse Inn.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues, etc.org, go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues, etc.
This is Pastor Tyler Arnold at Christ Lutheran in Platte Woods, Kansas City, Missouri. We are privileged to serve our Lord in word and sacrament through the historic liturgies of the church. Do join us for divine service at 8 and 10:45 and adult Bible study and Sunday school at 9:30. Each Wednesday evening we have Vespers at 7 p.m. Our address is 6700 Northwest 72nd Street, or call us at 816-741-0483. You can find us on the web at ChristLC.net. Come and be our guest at and with Christ.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Tuesday afternoon, the 21st of August. We're coming to you live. We're talking about restoring the art of conversation and debate. Shane Rosenthal is our guest, author of an article in the latest issue of Modern Reformation magazine titled The Lost Art of Conversation. Okay, so we've had, and these things all kind of go together. We've had a little charity that is recognizing the intrinsic value of the person, even if you completely disagree with their ideas, being willing to truly understand those ideas as much as you may disagree with them. Then you say there's kind of some nuts and bolts that we need to work through here, Shane, of actually, and well informed by classical education of all things, about how we ought to approach that. Talk about it.
Yeah, so what I do also in the articles, I walk through just the in classical education. I've just served on classical school boards, and I'm actually continuing to use that method as I teach my own children. I just was in Florida giving some lectures on classical education, and that's built on the whole idea of grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And it's basically the way you learn any thing. Like if you learn the piano, first you have to learn the grammar of the piano. It's the notes and the scales, just music in general. But then there's the logic, the meaning, the music theory. You have to sort of ask why do certain notes go together. And then finally you get to the rhetoric stage, which is the performance. And so you can have that in language arts too. First you learn the grammar of language. You get into a little higher age where you're learning, you're asking the why questions, why is something important, the philosophy, and then you get to the later ages and say in high school and you're giving papers and speeches. And that's what we should do, I think, in conversations as well. First, we have to focus on the words and the ideas of the particular person we're trying to learn from, because, again, we've already submitted ourselves to a posture of learning and humility. So we are learning. We're listening carefully to the ideas expressed in language. And then we ask the why questions. Why is this important? Why is it better than other alternatives? Why is it compelling? What other ideas would possibly work better? And then we get to the rhetoric stage where we communicate something back, either at the same sitting or at another sitting, having thought it through. Now we're at the rhetoric stage, and we're expressing our opinion back. And I think that stage, those three stages, are very helpful in terms of at least giving a structure to any kind of formal conversation, and even informal.
So there are at least two obstacles, one easily overcome, one not so easy here, Shane. The first one would be, well, just coming to a set of common definitions on the words you're going to use. What words, what the words that make up our ideas actually going to mean in common with one another. But the bigger obstacle, and you can get over that pretty easily by just kind of explaining yourself. The bigger obstacle is, especially in our post-modern culture, a lot of people who express ideas are very comfortable with the idea of their words having rather fluid meaning, if sometimes no meaning at all. Sometimes an argument will be, well, that's just words, that's just semantics, and everything is to be dismissed with just a wave of the hand. How do we regain just a common understanding that words mean things?
Right. Well, that's where I always say when I'm speaking in public that that's the crucial issue, because if you're going to be in a conversation with someone whose words don't mean anything, I mean, that's a fool's errand. And when a culture gets to the point where they sort of espouse Madonna's philosophy that words are useless, especially sentences, you know, I think that's a recipe for anarchy. I mean, you don't want to be in the middle of an intersection with someone who thinks that words are useless. I mean, the traffic laws are written in words, and if you feel the need for speed, it's a recipe for all kinds of disaster. And it's also a recipe for disaster in relationships. If you were going to have a deep conversation about important themes and ideas, what is it to be good? What does it mean to be righteous? How does one get to heaven? Is there a heaven? Is there a God? Those are important ideas and themes that can cause problems in relationship when you disagree. And if words and ideas don't mean anything, it's only about what you feel, I would simply say that person is creating their own island, and they're going to have what they want when they want it, like a three-year-old, no matter what you say. And so in those kinds of cases, I recommend just having a good relationship and avoiding the deep subjects, because you're not going to win them over, and you're only going to get into an argument.
Then finally, when it comes time to present our ideas, the truth therein, you say that we could take a little advice from the ancient Greek philosopher Aristotle. What is it?
Aristotle, in his book, on the modes of persuasion, classical rhetoric, he argues that there are three main modes of persuading, moving someone, changing someone's opinions. And those three things, those three headings, he summarizes are the logos. So in other words, there's the words of your argument. They have to be good. So put yourself like, what if the words of your argument are, you're on trial, and your lawyer is trying to persuade the jury. So he's going to, first of all, tell the evidence correctly. He's going to give you, it's his summary opinion. He's presenting the case. And the logos are the words of his case. What's his argument? The second thing is the emotion of the way he speaks. That's the pathos, and that's the way, you know, you could speak with passion, or you could speak like Ben Stein in the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where it's just monotone and you're putting your audience to sleep. Though you may have correct words, you may not be able to persuade if the way you're saying what you're saying distracts people or puts them to sleep or makes them angry. And the final thing he said was we also need ethos, which is trust. We need to be trustworthy people. If we have the right words with the right emotion, but we're an untrustworthy person, we will often fail to convince anybody. I mean, think about what is going on in the current presidential campaigns. A lot of the ads going back and forth are about whether or not you can trust the opponent on the other side. This person may have a problem with his taxes. That will show you that he's an untrustworthy person, et cetera, because trust is a crucial idea. And if you don't trust the person, you won't accept anything that they say.
And this has to do with being critical of your own approach to the other person. It has to do with checking yourself, as you say, for some very common logical fallacies that all of us fall into, sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously, kind of the dirty tricks of debate.
Right.
What
yeah, if we're committing dirty tricks, if we're committing logical fallacies, if we are lobbing bombs, if we're demonizing, those are some aspects of it. It also gets down to, you know, whether or not we are a decent person. I mean, if we have a history of telling lies, and then we come to this conversation, it may be a fool's errand to try to convince this person of anything, even if you actually have the truth. I mean, that's the moral of the story of The Boy Who Cried Wolf.
It is a pretty ironic situation, isn't it, Shane, that we live in an age where conversation is everywhere. You're never alone. And then when you turn on the television or go on the internet, it's just blibbity blab all the time. And so much talk is occurring with so little actual conversation, much less what ought to be the good and salutary conclusion of conversation, agreement on things that are actually objectively true.
Yeah, it's sort of like the whole Facebook phenomenon. You know, people are spending 3 or 4 hours in social media, but at the end of the day, they're alone by themselves in a room typing on a keyboard. So in the same way, when we have conversations about the things that matter, we often parrot the kinds of things we've seen done regularly, day in and day out. And if you look at what happens on the television news, you'll have news segments where people are asked to comment on a given topic, and they are just yelling at each other, and they're crossing paths, and they're not answering each other's objections. They're just basically venting in public. And I think that has trained us all to, when we, whether it's via Facebook and talking to our friends from high school who have different opinions than ours, we vent instead of having real conversations, whether it's in person and on Facebook, whether it's wherever the conversation is. We need to go back and reinvestigate what it means to really talk with other people. And then we also have to ask, are we good listeners?
For society in general, to speak in that broadest possible way, for society in general, is it possible to do anything except just keep our nose up above the surface of the water in terms of political conversation? I mean, it seems like we dream of a time when we can have honest conversation in the public square, but we never really get any closer to it. What are your thoughts there, Shane, with about a minute to close?
Well, I think the way we've structured society, you know, we have nice air-conditioned homes and cars that we'd like to stay in. In the past, you know, you'd have people sitting out on the front porch and the neighbors would walk by, and there was more community involvement. Now, people, they get done with their day, they come home, and so the conversations that are going to be taking place are, again, via the surrogates and mostly about the important issues. We watch it happen, but we're watching it happen at a very shallow level in a way where the opposing sides attack one another. We desperately need, number one, to ask the question again about what is significant community. How can we get community back? How can we actually get face-to-face interaction back? And then once we do that, if we actually have real community, how do we appropriately, as Christians, tackle this question of relating to the other? How do we do it with grace? How do we do it with kindness? And how do we do it so that we can persuade others about what's the good, the true, and the beautiful, in especially when it comes to important, crucial matters like what we believe and why we believe it?
Shane Rosenthal is executive producer of the national radio show The White Horse Inn and author of an article for Modern Reformation magazine titled The Lost Art of Conversation. You can find out more about The White Horse Inn and Modern Reformation magazine at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Shane, thank you very much for being our guest again.
My pleasure, Todd.
When we come back, it's hour two of Issues Etc. We're going to spend that hour first with Pastor Anthony Voltatorne, author of a recent article titled The Plague of Measuring the Church. We'll talk about how it really does harm the church to constantly be laying our rulers, our measuring devices, our standards next to it and trying to determine whether the church is being successful or unsuccessful. Then Jay Watts of Life Training Institute will be our guest. We'll talk about abortion in the case of rape, incest, and the life of the mother. Hour two of Issues Etc., right after this.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. Rod Rosenblatt, co-host of the national radio show The White Horse Inn, on the uniqueness of Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. presents Jesus Christ and His saving work out of the text of the Bible. The teaching of Christ alone is the driving force of this program. It deals with the important issues of our time with carefully chosen guests and hosts who are knowledgeable in the scriptures, history, and their application. On Issues Etc., you will not hear pop evangelicalism, but confessional Lutheran theology fluently presented.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. A Voice in the Wilderness of American Evangelicalism, Issues, Etc. Thanks for your support.